afternoon. You're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. On today's programme, Leo Varadkar says today he deeply regrets losing Francis Fitzgerald from his cabinet. How has his leadership been impacted by the political crisis? Europe stands full square behind Ireland on the border question, but will Donald Tusk's support provoke a backlash against us from the Brexiteers? We'll discuss all the most recent developments in an extraordinary week with our panel after the news now with Vivian Traynor. Vivian, thank you very much. This is Saturday with Clare Byrne. You're very welcome to the programme. The text number is 51551. The email is saturday@rte.ie and on Twitter at SaturdayRTE. Joining us on the programme today, we have Peter Burke, Fine Gael TD for Longford Westmeath, Stephen Donnelly, Fianna Fáil TD for Wicklow and Brexit spokesperson. Martin Kenny is with us, Sinn Féin TD for Sligo, Leitrim and spokesperson on agriculture, food and the marine. Ray Bassett, former Irish ambassador to Canada and Dervil MacDonald Group business editor at Independent News and Media. You're all very welcome. Morning. Thanks for coming in today. We might start with response and reaction to Leo Varadkar's interview with Marion Finucane. And to get us started, we'll take a listen to a clip. This is him talking about the relationship with Fianna Fáil, the crisis of the past week, and Leo Varadkar's assertion that it's actually strengthened the confidence and supply deal with Fianna Fáil.
And I think in an odd, perverse way, perhaps the events of the past week, because they brought us so close to election, have actually focused minds and mean this government is more likely to continue for longer than people might have thought. And I'm convinced and determined that we will honour the agreement in full and we'll get through to our third budget in October of next year.
Stephen Donnelly, Fianna Fáil's view on that.
Fianna Fáil's view is we hope so. We have signed up for three budgets. We did so in good faith. A lot of people said in month one and month six and month 12 and month 18 that it wouldn't work.
I know, but that the impact of that week that has just gone past.
Yeah, no, sure. I'm not playing down the week, but the Fianna Fáil's view is we have signed up for three budgets and we're within the terms and conditions of the supply and confidence. That's what we would do. It has worked reasonably well. There was an escalation process within the supply and confidence to deal with exactly this. So that's what Micheál Martin triggered last week when he went privately to the Taoiseach. And he said, look, we can't stand over this. And the two leaders worked their way through it. On a human level, it will be the first time that Micheál and Leo have spent that much time together. And personal relationships matter on this. I think both leaders have said that they acted in good faith to try and avoid an election. And tensions were inevitable. It's not easy facilitating a minority government from opposition, because any time the government does anything wrong, which any government, you know, gets stuff wrong, you are attacked immediately because you are facilitating supply and confidence.
But so we know that Fianna Fáil didn't want an election. We know that Fine Gael didn't want an election. But how does Fianna Fáil, how do you feel about Leo Varadkar after that week? Because he could have put a stop to all that stuff much earlier. In fact, we heard him saying today that he had the press briefing email, which you could argue was the damning email, on Saturday. So this time last week, he had that email. He met Micheál Martin on Saturday, on Sunday and on Monday. You could argue needlessly, because the damage was done at that stage. He could have put an end to it. So how do you feel about him dragging all of this out for much longer than it needed to be dragged out?
There are serious questions to be asked about his judgment. There's no question. But I had serious questions about his judgment before this happened. I think this has been a public display of that. We'll get on to Brexit later, but I think he has done things on Brexit that were very reckless. For me, I listened carefully to the interview this morning, and there's two important points I don't want to bring back up. You know, emails and get into it. The debate has been had. The minister resigned. It was the right thing to do. But the question is, have we any lessons to learn from this? And there were two things that jumped out at me from the interview with the Taoiseach this morning. One is, he maintains that Frances Fitzgerald did nothing wrong. Now, that worries me. It is clear as day that she did something wrong. It is clear as day she should have acted. It is clear as day that Fine Gael's entire defence, which is she was told that there was nothing she could do, is a false defence. That's not what she was told at all. And so the message that this morning's interview and this line from Fine Gael that she did nothing wrong, the message that sends out is if you are in a hospital and you see falsification of patient records, if you see something and you need to blow the whistle on it, essentially what Fine Gael are saying is if agents of the state set out to get you for blowing the whistle and one of our ministers is told, they may or may not act in your defence. And I don't think that's the message that we should be sending out. That's the first issue. The second one is I was stunned in his in the Taoiseach's Friday interview when he went on the 6-1 News. And he referred to Parliament as a kangaroo court. And various Fine Gael ministers did this. It was clearly within the speaking notes that they were to call the Dáil a kangaroo court. Now, if a TD calls the Dáil a kangaroo court, well, that's one thing. But if the head of state goes on national television and after your national parliament has followed due process, parliamentary questions, followed by leaders' questions, followed by statements, followed by evidence.
That was a poppet Sinn Féin, though, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know and I don't care. I think if the head of state comes out and describes due process in our parliament as a kangaroo court, we should be worried. Because to me, that sounds like Donald Trump having a go at the judiciary because he doesn't like what they're saying. So we need
to
be careful. You compare
Leo Varadkar to Donald Trump.
I'm saying that describing our parliament as a kangaroo court having followed due process is analogous to Donald Trump describing the American judiciary in the ways he did, because he didn't like what they say.
It doesn't look like we're going to get to that third budget.
The point, no, we will get to that third budget. But that doesn't mean we have to shy away and be awfully polite to each other. Like, we do have to call these things out. Hopefully we will get to the third budget. But words matter. And essentially undermining your parliament as a kangaroo court by the head of state, that matters.
Okay.
And saying to whistleblowers, look, if this were to happen again, the fact that we believe she did nothing wrong essentially means we would act in the same way.
Okay.
That matters.
I want to bring Peter Burke in on this because you could argue that that was an interview of two halves today, and that the man in the first half of the interview talking about the political crisis was shaken by it and was on much surer footing when it came to Brexit. Do you think that he's been damaged by the week that has gone past?
I think it's been a very difficult week for everyone in politics, but I don't think he's damaged by it. I think he stood up for fairness, for high standards. I think he stood up for due process. I think, if anything, the tribunal has taught us this week that it is the forum for dealing with these issues, because a lot of things have been said in the Dáil in the past, which have been now proven conclusively not to be true.
You're talking about Garda Keith Harrison.
Yeah, I think we have to go by the tribunal. And it wasn't the Taoiseach saying that the Dáil is a kangaroo court. He said, let's not make it into a kangaroo court, which is an entirely different thing, because we need to ensure that we have a tribunal set up by the Oireachtas. It's to go about to find the truth. We have seen in the past that Francis Fitzgerald has put in huge legislation support for whistleblowers. And essentially the tribunal is set about now to find the truth. And critically, Claire,
Do you agree with him? Do you think Francis Fitzgerald did nothing wrong and shouldn't have had to go, apart from the fact that you had the confidence and supply arrangement and
your
choice?
Well, I would ask myself the question, what should Francis Fitzgerald have done? It would not be proper, it would be actually improper for her to interfere in the counsel of another witness going forward.
Nobody's saying that she should have done that. Nobody's saying that she should have done that. And actually, I asked Jim O'Callaghan last week to explain to me what she could have done, given that she was told you have no function here. And
well,
we know what she could have done.
AG said on the email in terms of she has no function, exactly,
yeah,
as you say.
But she could have phoned the Garda Commissioner and said, what is your strategy? Because your strategy looks very different to what you've said publicly about Maurice McCabe, and there would have been nothing wrong in doing that. And that's the bottom line. It's very simple,
well,
what she could have done.
I think we've learned a lot from this week in terms of, number one, the process by which Charlie Flanagan said in 5 months he's got 12,000 emails, that the Department of Justice is very dysfunctional. The communique between the Minister and the Department leaves serious questions. And I think if anyone reads the Tolan report, it's only 22 pages. Item number one in the Tolan report cited the secretive and soloistic culture within the Department of Justice. It cited clearly that it's not performing in terms of its management, in terms of accountability. So we need to rectify the wrong that's been done here and ensure that those in the department are held to account and that we get proper procedures.
Were you
in
comfortable
place
at the Taoiseach having a lash at civil servants who can't fight back when he did so in the Dáil this week?
I think it's very clear civil servants have to be held to public scrutiny. They are providing the Taoiseach, the Prime Minister, coming into our Dáil with information. That information needs to be accurate. It needs to be reflective of the circumstances that the truth and where we're in. And it wasn't last week. And on three occasions, and not only in this area here, in relation to the ODCA, he was also having to correct the Dáil record. That's different areas. And I've seen the PSC, I've seen the Department of Justice in front of me at the Public Accounts Committee, and it's incredible some of the changes and stories. And it's been highlighted in our Module 1 report into Temple Moore. It's been incredible, the changes in evidence in terms of the inaccuracies, in terms of tax compliance. We've discussed it all here before.
OK, well, let's have a listen to what Leo Varadkar had to say about that, about being misled in the Dáil and how he felt about it.
Extremely unpleasant experience. You know, I'm somebody who Jeremy likes to answer questions and give straight answers to questions, even when it gets me into trouble on occasion. And you feel very exposed when you go in there. And it was on three occasions on two different matters, a separate matter relating to the ODC that has nothing to do with this. In the space of a week, I was correcting the Dáil record, not because of anything that I had done on my part, the fact that I was relaying information to the Dáil based on briefings from the Department of Justice that were incorrect. And that knocks your own confidence.
Ray Bassett, as somebody who worked for, what, nearly 40 years in the civil service, what do you think about what has been said about the civil service and what we heard there from Leo Varadkar today?
Yeah, well, obviously I feel bad about it, but I do think civil servants should be accountable. But I think at the same time, it should be recognised that the Department of Justice, a lot of good areas in the Department of Justice, and also some of the people who've been mentioned in the media recently, have done phenomenal service to Ireland, particularly during the peace process. The Deputy Secretary of the Department of Justice did phenomenal work on the whole area of decommissioning, of setting up human rights, the Human Rights Commission, both north and south. So what I would say is that the Department of Justice is a catch-all department. So I remember once asking them, what do they do? They said, we do everything everybody else doesn't. If there's something that isn't in a brief, it's ours. So it tends to be very disparate. And there has been difficulties in pulling them together. But at the same time,
what do you think the impact of the Taoiseach of the day saying what he said about senior officials and about a department as a whole? What would be the impact of that?
I think the impact would be bad. And I also think that, you know, the system only works when you pull together. If one side starts briefing or giving out about the other, then it becomes dysfunctional. I think, you know, civil servants do a lot of work and then they present often the results of their work to the minister, who takes credit for it. Now, that's fine. But at the same time, you can't take all the credit and not take some of the blame.
But if you send somebody in there, you know, with the wrong information and you leave them exposed in the way the Taoiseach was exposed, you have to expect a bit of fight back too.
Absolutely. And in fact, I remember myself when I worked for people like Brian Cowan and Micheál Martin, that the one thing that they would hate to do is to ever mislead the Dáil. It's kind of a cardinal sin. And, you know, I remember once we had to go back on figures for the passport office, and that was a big, big issue. And it was a small little thing. But there is the replies to the Dáil are usually sacrosanct. You don't ever mislead the Dáil. You know, most ministers would lay that down from the moment they arrived in. They have great respect for the Dáil and they want to do it. So if there was mistakes, and I'm sure that there were mistakes, clearly, you have to find out how they occurred. And I'm particularly glad that the government and the opposition have come together to appoint an outside senior counsel to look at this. Because I think if it was done by a public servant, it's not a good idea because they're too susceptible to pressure from the top. I would say that it's a bad day for the civil service and it's a bad day for relations between the senior civil service and the government. But let's get to the root of it and let's sort out the problem.
Okay, Dervil, I know you listened to the interview because you were tweeting your way through it.
I was.
What did you think? What stood out for you?
Yeah, so a couple of things stood out for me. What I learned from previous iterations of successive Garda controversies, and although I've moved on from the legal editor role close to 2 years now, it's something I'd be very familiar with. But what we've learned from previous iterations is that there is in fact a red flag warning system for Cabinet when there are sensitive legal cases. And we learned that during one of the last iterations, that in fact there is a red flag warning that the Cabinet is informed routinely of things that might be might expose actually the Cabinet of the day or the T-shirt of the day. And I cannot for the life of me understand how they didn't all pull together on this issue, how they did not know 2 years ago that any issue in relation to Sergeant McCabe is something that would have needed to be prioritised, red flagged, passed around, communicated with the political advisors and other kind of key people. What struck me this morning about there's two different Leos.
That suggestion was made in this studio last week as well. And let's just put it out there. People are asking, did Enda Kenny know in 2015 that these emails were being sent about the Garda legal strategy in relation to Maurice McCabe at the O'Higgins Commission? That's the question, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the key question. And I think, you know, that, you know, it's sometimes we hide behind legalese and we hide behind kind of positions. But, you know, did you know or ought you to have known? And when that did come across your desk, OK, you might not have any function, but you still would have a responsibility. And there were two very competing narratives at that time. There was on one level this what was very, very late, but belated mass political support support in some sense for Maurice McCabe, and yet another arm of the state was deploying a clearly different strategy. And it is those kind of things that have to be caught and captured by the system. For me, there's two types of Leo Varadkar, and I've listened to him on air and seen him on air and then seen him in different fora. Sometimes when Leo comes out, you get that, you know, the shrewd, the very, very competent, kind of very, very articulate Leo, the one who is quite competitive. And then what we heard this morning was the kind of the more sort of mournful, kind of reflective Leo that people actually identify with a little bit more. And I was wondering, well, where was that contrition, where was that sensitivity last Saturday? When he actually could have went to Micheál Martin, he mightn't have had the full report of emails, but why over that last weekend, when they had substantive emails that should have been, and let's, you know, let's put aside any notions of a competence and supply arrangement. This is the real coalition. And this was them not communicating to Fianna Fáil.
Well, I don't know. Did Micheál Martin know that he knew those emails existed, didn't he?
Was he shown them? Was he shown them in full?
Do you know the answer to that, Stephen?
Yeah, so the troll was going on. Fine Gael or the Taoiseach, I don't know how it was working. We weren't privy to the negotiation. So information was being sent across. But it was being done in confidence. And we can now say after the fact, we were saying this before the fact, I can say it after the fact, Fianna Fáil was not looking for an election. The view was that had Fianna Fáil been getting information from the Taoiseach and tweeting it or putting it out or leaking it to the media, that would have triggered an election.
So, I'm just wondering, did Micheál Martin see that email on Saturday which said the Taoiseach has been briefed on how to handle media inquiries on Maurice McCabe and the legal strategy, and that briefing ultimately came from Garda HQ?
Yes, and my understanding is that documentation went across late on Saturday, but it was going all the time. It was. You know, a few documents at a time, but the full amount didn't come through until.
And just what was the point in having further conversations once Micheál Martin had seen that? You know,
well, I think, Claire, it's a testament to it, backs up what I and every other Fianna Fáil TD was saying, which was we don't want an election, because if we had wanted an election, then the first thing you do with a smoking gun is you go to the media. Micheál Martin was working in confidence with the Taoiseach to try and avoid an election.
But you didn't want an election because of the absolute public revulsion to the prospect of that. And I think that the Taoiseach is right when he said it's somewhat odd and perverse that the events of the last week might actually strengthen and extend the current confidence supply arrangement. But that is because the public, I think it was that public revulsion to that prospect. And I think that there was some interesting things, I think, as well, sort of positive that came out of it. It just showed, and the Irish Times has an interesting editorial on it, which is saying that it sent out a message to Sinn Féin and others that the political centre can hold. So I think that everyone was kind of calling a January-February election.
Okay, we're bringing Martin Duffy on that. Is that the message you heard?
That's the establishment holding. Look, I mean, there's a little irony in it to hear, you know, Fianna Fáil coming out as a crusader for good governance and against corruption in all of this. But however, the reality...
But the whole thing pushed them together. That's what we're hearing.
Well, that's what we're hearing, yeah. And I mean, I don't think they're very far apart. While Fianna Fáil are not in government, they're clearly not in opposition either. And that's the reality of it. And at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, this has been a crisis for the system. The entire system, we have seen a huge fault line here. And that needs to be resolved and sorted out. The Department of Justice was complicit in obstructing justice when it came to the Charlton Tribunal and what was going on there. And the Minister for Justice would be kept informed of it. And that's the crux of where this matter is. And the questions that are around all of that, and you're right, Claire, in regard to the email on Saturday, which was the one about the press briefing, like, that was just, you know, absolutely devastating. And yet, we dragged on, and I was up at your show on Monday night, and we had Minister Coveney on a link from Cork, defending everything as if nothing had happened. And this was, what, 4 days later? I mean, you know, somebody somewhere was not doing their job, because they clearly, this whole position was untenable, and
but
yet it continued on.
From a Sinn Féin point of view, and I see in the news headlines today that your old Coral has been organised to select your new leader and so on, but it would suit you to push Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael closer together, because you've always said
they're one and the same. We don't have to, they're already doing it. We don't have to push them together. They're coming together. It's you know, Sean Lamass
said... Stephen, you're playing into their hands.
Sean Lamass said, what's the difference in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael? When we're in, they're out. That's all the difference.
When they're in, might be the next thing.
I think Sinn Féin are probably slightly nervous, because certainly what I've seen over the last 7 years in politics is a widening of a gap, is a clear differentiation mm-hmm. in policy terms between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. I have seen in the last seven years, Fine Gael have taken, and it has accelerated under the new Taoiseach, a more traditional sort of Tory party right-wing approach. That's what they've done. And Fianna Fáil under Micheál Martin has clearly, and you don't have to take my word for it, you can look at the policy documents, has clearly taken a more centre-left view. And my sense is Sinn Féin are nervous, because actually Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, when we do go to the country, whenever the next election is, will be offering different propositions, quite a clear centre-left and centre-right proposal. And that doesn't suit Sinn Féin. And if we could just go back, I said at the start, it is there are tensions and it is difficult facilitating a government from opposition. And here's Martin again. You're the same. You're not really in opposition. So it's worth noting that while Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar were trying to deal with this and trying to avoid an election, and I would respectfully disagree with Derval in saying the reason we didn't want an election was because of public opinion. I was in this studio on Friday drive time when the public clearly didn't want an election. And Fianna Fáil's position was very clear. We don't want an election, but there must be accountability. And so Martin's kind of continual goading, we deal with that every hour of every day. You're the same. And actually, I think it is a testament both to the TDs and the members of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. That we have resisted this sort of heckling for nearly 2 years now, and we have created at least some stability to deal with.
Okay, well, if you're saying that your policies are moving away from what you say are right-wing policies coming from Fine Gael, then you're moving closer to Sinn Féin's position. And that's where you will be, that's where your manifestos will be when we head out for the next general election.
Well, Fianna Fáil is pro-enterprise social democratic. I mean, Sinn Féin is in the Marxist category. So it may be, we may be moving centre left back to, I believe, where Fianna Fáil came from. But I think there's still a fair Atlantic Ocean.
The only party that neither Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael ruled out going into a coalition with was each other. So clearly the next election is about a coalition government with both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael together.
When you look at labels being floated about, like Stephen Donnelly is putting on Fine Gael there, Fine Gael is currently increasing the minimum wage for the fourth time in January in the last 6 years. We have a situation now where 36% of people don't pay any tax because the ceiling has been risen. We're in a situation now where those on the average industrial wage, the ceiling has been risen in terms of
so
when
you
they enter the top
to
rate of tax.
So you object to the Tory
very
tag.
Very strongly. And on top of that, look in terms of social welfare, what the Taoiseach has done when he was minister as well, by extending benefits to ensure that
okay,
everyone
but you were,
was brought
when I,
together.
When I suggested that Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil were moving closer together, if what Stephen says is true, you were nodding in agreement. So you think that's where they're going?
To be fair, there's one thing I would say is that, you know, Sinn Féin is in a position now where 10% of its councillors have walked away. That contagion has spread into the Oireachtas, where they lost an Oireachtas member. There is no due process in Sinn Féin. That's very clear. And that's what the Taoiseach and Fianna Fáil, to be fair, were trying to avert an election and trying to ensure that, you know, we got a circumstance where the government kept together on the face of Brexit, the social welfare bill, this FEMPI legislation, mm-hmm. to get our budget passed, being responsible. But you have to have due process in life. You have to respect the principles of natural justice. And Sinn Féin don't do that, unfortunately.
Martin, respond to that for me, because Sinn Féin have said over and over again, we don't have a bullying issue. And yet we saw Senator O'Clardy resigning.
Yeah, and Senator O'Clardy was due to face a convention this weekend, where the day before he resigned, he wanted a two-candidate strategy and was prepared to go into that convention and be one of those candidates. The weekend before, he was looking to get onto the Sinn Féin Ard Comhairle. I mean, look, people make decisions. I liked Trevor, got on very well with him, decent guy, but I'm so disappointed in what he has done and the way he's handled all of this. Certainly for all the time I've been in Sinn Féin, I've never encountered anything that could resemble a bullying culture. There's tough talk, there's hard negotiations, hard talking, people have rows, people fall out, as they do in every political party. When I look around me and I look across the benches in Fianna Fáil, I see people who are former Fianna Fáil, the Healy Rays, Matty McGrath. There's people leave political parties all the time. Same thing when I look behind me, I see people who are former members of the Labour Party. Mm-hmm. It happens all the time. In every workplace, I'm quite sure in this workplace in RTE, it's not like a Buddhist retreat. Everybody does have their rows and their differences. That happens everywhere. That's life. And I mean,
but when you
have
people coming forward, though, in numbers, I'm talking about the councillors and alleging bullying, and it becomes not just one, not just two, not just three, not just four.
It has become a trend, and I see that. But I'm saying to you honestly, you know, and I'm not trying to hide behind anything here. I'm saying to you honestly, I don't know anything about it. I don't see it. when our party, I understand, goes and talks to people and tries to find out what's going on and say, okay, who bullied who? Where did this happen? When did it happen? Who said what to whom? Nothing can be found.
But to avoid this becoming an issue, do you not think it would be wise now to set up a proper probe and a proper investigation and set up proper processes so that people can go through what they feel is a proper procedure as opposed to resigning and coming out and saying I was bullied?
But I mean, let's face it. As I said to you, does it stand up? That Trevor O'Cloherty was bullied when the day before he wanted to be
candidate. I don't know enough about his situation, so let's leave that aside. But let's talk about the councillors who come out one after the other saying, there is a problem with bullying. And you continue to insist that there isn't a problem with bullying. Well, maybe that comes a point where you have to sit down and go, should we ask the question of ourselves here?
There's a problem with what people perceive as bullying. There's a problem. People will sometimes present something and say, I was bullied. I mean,
so it's a victim's fault.
No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Sometimes that's what happens. And that's a reality. That's a reality.
It's not victim blaming.
And you see, this is one of the problems, Claire, that we have. I, as a representative, and an awful lot of my colleagues, are biting our lips all the time because you're afraid to say anything. Because you'd be said, you're attacking people that are vulnerable and all. I mean, at the end of the day, you have to have a process to deal with this, and the party has a process to deal with it. And when people make complaints, they go through that process. And when they come out the other side of it, sometimes they're not satisfied, sometimes they are. And the people who aren't satisfied go off and say, the process didn't work and I'm still being bullied. But what do we do?
Darrell, do you want to come in there?
Is there an easy answer to this?
I don't, actually. There's a real sort of, it's this kind of Sinn Féin's hashtag Me Too phenomenon and this kind of ability for you, Martin, just to kind of dismiss the ever-increasing numbers of people coming forward instead of perhaps accepting that there are difficulty. And I can understand, given Sinn Féin's history, why people don't have confidence in its due processes, for want of a better phrase. I think just to get back, Claire, just to the original kind of debate that we're having, I think, it's been very interesting for Alan Kelly and his potential future leaderships in Labour, having triggered a lot of the current political debate. But actually, one of the parties that really come out of this with very, very, very little credit is Sinn Féin. I was writing in this morning's Irish Independent how it's cynical casualness to collapse not one but two administrations, both in Stormont and in Dublin. We haven't had a government in Stormont since last January, is something that I think the Irish public will be taking away and digesting and considering when it comes to any future election prospects. I think the one party that has not covered itself in glory in respect of this has been Sinn Féin, and the Irish Times actually picked it up this morning. They say, that its purported interest in the welfare of Gardaí, in this case the whistleblower Sergeant Maurice McCabe, rang hollow when just 2 weeks ago its Ardesh gave a rapture salvation to its TD Martin Ferris in 2009 when two IRA men were convicted of killing Detective Garda Jerry McCabe in a botched robbery in Adair in 1996, were released from Castlereagh prison. It was Ferris who collected them. So I think that when people step back, there is an irony perhaps that this will have brought Fine Gael and Fine Gael closer, but I think that people will be looking to Sinn Féin fitness and future probity.
I just want to say in the strongest possible terms that, Martin, respectfully, I couldn't disagree more with what you've just said. And if Peter or myself said what you've just said, they would be calling for us to resign. Let me just very quickly. So there are three councillors in Wicklow, for example, who've now left over the same allegations. But look what we've just heard right now. Trevor O'Cloherty, a member of the Sinn Féin parliamentary party, resigned and cited bullying. And the first thing Martin did was attack Trevor O'Cloherty and undermine him. No, you didn't. Sorry, Martin. What you said was, but sure, he had a selection convention and he would say that.
Is that untrue? Was there no selection?
You can't do that.
No, Martin,
you're... Well, he's allowed to present his side of the story.
Yes, but look at the instinct from Sinn Féin. The instinct from Sinn Féin is not to say, Trevor is a good guy and we are going to look into it. The instinct is to instantly attack him and undermine his credibility. As, by the way, the last week has all been about that with somebody else.
There are lots of important things happening. I hear that there's going to be a special cabinet meeting now on Monday morning at 9 o'clock. That's all to do with the border. It's a moving story and we'll come back to that after this break. So Donald Tusk, he of the EU Council, said if the UK's offer is unacceptable for Ireland, it would also be unacceptable for the EU. Ray, what did you make of him saying that?
I think it's a double edge for the Taoiseach and the government. I mean, there's no doubt that from the Taoiseach's point of view, it was a bit of a coup to get Donald Tusk here and to back the government so strongly. So I think that has got to be said. But at the same time, I think he's handed us a ticking parcel. So if anything goes wrong, we are very much
in
there.
Well, that's what I thought. It makes it Ireland against
the
UK.
We're right in the front line. And that makes it difficult because in the end, we're not going to get exactly what we're asking for. And the EU, and sorry, the UK is not going to, we're going to have somewhere in between. So if the Taoiseach pushes it to the very limit, there's a danger the thing could fall apart and we would be the main sufferer. So, you know, if it works, great. If it doesn't work, we've doubled the stakes and the damage to Ireland will be much greater if it doesn't come true than if we don't get the proper deal than it would have if we stayed in the EU pack. I mean, our whole strategy so far has been to essentially stay in the undergrowth over a lot of areas and let the EU take the heat. Now we've been brought right out to the front, and the EU country. And remember, a lot of EU countries will only have a marginal interest in this, and they're leaving it to us to face the UK directly on an area which is probably the most intractable.
And Shona Murray, writing in The Independent today, says that the language used by Donald Tusk will be seen as some in the UK as hostile, even incendiary. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think that we need to de-escalate the situation. We need to stop this us versus them. We live in these islands with the British. Whether we like it or not, we're going to have to share these islands for an eternity with them. They're at a particularly weak point in their history. And I think some of the triumphalism that we've seen in the Irish media and some of the Irish politicians isn't good.
Compared to what we've seen in the British media.
We don't expect anything better from them. We're used to them on that. But, we're going to have to live here. We've got to get a deal.
I don't know where you're hearing that, Ray, because, I mean, I'm listening carefully to Simon Coveney. Let's not make it about green and orange. Yeah. Let's continue the dialogue. Everything is all about appeasement. I haven't heard any sort of smug stuff going on.
I mean, some of the interviews that you're seeing on Channel 4 and that, people talking, almost with a triumphalism.
Irish people.
Yeah, that we've got Britain. I mean, even Fintan O'Toole saying, this is the first time that we're in the strong position. You know, language like that is not conducive to a deal. We've got to get a deal that everybody can live with.
Okay, can I just put, I want to put one example to you. This is again from Leo's interview today on Marian Finucane's programme. This is him asked about the British negotiating position.
If we're going to move to phase two, they're going to have to say yes to something. And that's the kind of work that is now ongoing.
Right.
Bear in mind...
there's this niggling thing.
Bear in mind, there was not that long ago and they weren't going to pay anything. And now they're...
That's different.
Now it's 60 billion.
Is that what you mean?
Partly. Con Houlihan used to say, don't insult the crocodile's mother till you cross the stream. Let's make none of it. You can do this in retrospect all the time. But remember, the British government, it's the Conservative and Unionist Party. They're dependent on the DUP. They have a whole constituency there. Asking them to do something which they can't do is not a good tactic. You can't go into a cul-de-sac unless you have a way out. And at the moment, I think we will have to back down slightly. I don't think the British are going to agree that that Northern Ireland will stay part of the single market and the customs. I just don't think
that's a hard border.
Possible.
How does it guarantee then that there won't be a hard border? And I think this is where perhaps Bertie Ahern was coming about, when you're talking about maybe the kind of classic fudge that you need. Look, the reality is, the customs union and the single market have been as integral to the peace process as much of the rhetoric that we have seen around Northern Ireland. I come from the border, like lots of people. I grew up on it, and I think sometimes actually people who don't come from the border, whether you lived on the north or southern side of it, just understand the significance of us for us. And it's not just it's deep in our psyche, but it's also just the economics of it. Over 110 million crossings per year. The invisibility of the border is critical to the economies on both sides of it. And here's the difficulty then, because if the British side is saying absolutely no way to, and that's where languages come in, because now we're talking about regulatory divergence and trying. Yeah. If we're trying desperately to find ways around this, it's going to pose, and I think Stephen and myself are heading over to Edinburgh later this week to look at Ireland and Scotland post-Brexit. And kind of one of the issues is that if we do get one of those kind of classic fudges or whatever way that we do it, that's going to cause difficulties for other parts of the UK, particularly Scotland. But this really matters for us. And
explain why.
Because the Scotland voted to remain, they will want to see, they would want similar concessions, for want of a better word, that if Northern Ireland got it. But it really, really, really matters for us, and I think that we are at quite a high point, and there are risks for us that if we leave some of the substantive detail, obviously we're not going to get every solution worked out, but if we leave too much of the substantive issues around the border until phase two, the real risk there is at that stage when the EU and the UK, and Ray, I will absolutely agree, we are any other business for most countries now. And once we move on to those substantive talks, if those issues aren't resolved, there are risks there.
So our hand is strong right now, but that won't always be the case.
It may not always be the case.
Phase two.
You know, look, I mean, the border is the Good Friday Agreement, you know, and all of the creative ambiguity, whatever phrases you want to deploy, all the kind of magic of the Good Friday Agreement, the fact that if you're born and raised there, you can assert British identity, Irish identity, both, all of these things matter. And this morning, David McWilliams, who I was having a good row with at Kilconomics a couple of weeks ago, was talking about kind of the demographic destiny of Northern Ireland, by the fact that 2036, you know, on the face of it, you will have more Catholics in Northern Ireland than Protestants, and that is something we have to really, really mind. I'm a nationalist, constitutional nationalist, raised in the Catholic tradition on the border, but we have to look after the diminishing Protestant, what will soon be a minority. And, you know, and they are genuinely fearful of talks of a united Ireland. They're genuinely fearful of that diminishing demographic position. They're genuinely fearful of their loss of identity. And actually, Brexit has been a nightmare for them, actually. The prospect of that will increase that. And, you know, and that is what they are fearful of. And we have to put our arms around that community and bring them forward. Because
I just don't, I mean, I've listened to this all week and people talking in detail about possible solutions. I've heard nothing that would work.
The Good Friday Agreement is the solution. The Good Friday Agreement is the solution that allows those communities and this island to move forward. And unfortunately,
it was the EU in 1992 that created the single market, not the Good Friday Agreement. So that line was erased by the EU, not by the Good Friday.
Well, when people voted for Brexit, they weren't voting necessarily to leave the customs market or the customs union and the single market. That level of understanding was not in the British public when it was debated. So that is the unique scenario that we find our ways in. So if essentially what we're arguing for is, whatever we call it, a de facto customs union and single market in all but name, in order to protect what we have and to protect that hugely important economic relation that we have.
We saw the huge problem the DUP has with that. You know, the moment it was raised, they were threatening to pull down the government.
Read the newsletter, which I read voraciously, if you read what the other side, actually, it's one of the questions that Ben Lowry, the editor of the newsletter, has been asking is, we'll see very, very soon whether the Theresa May's Tory party is committed to the union as the DUP is. So these are some of the critical questions that community is asking itself. And we have to be careful that we don't go march into this triumphalism about a united Ireland that doesn't carry along with it, because my fear...
Do you agree with Ray that there has been some triumphalism coming from this side?
No, I don't believe from the Irish side, but I have been profoundly depressed by the rhetoric and language. So you give a large, a wide berth for a lot of the more right-wing elements of the UK press, but even given that caveat, I have been profoundly depressed by some of the language and rhetoric, that it only took a couple of weeks, what you saw that was scratching beneath the surface, and it just didn't just depress me. It actually... You know, it made me extremely worried.
Well, a lot of it's based on ignorance, though, isn't it?
Ignorance, like, in the sense of lack of knowledge, and also just an ignorance in a sense of, you know, arrogance. And when Ian Paisley Jr. was speaking earlier this week, I heard a younger version of his late father. You know, and it was actually when Ian Paisley actually, a senior, got rid of all of that, you know, high-minded rhetoric, it actually soothed the balm. And that's what we need to be very, very, very careful here, because it's an important piece, but it's a fragile piece, and we have to inch forward.
It's extraordinary where all of this has led us to, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It has given license to people to say things that for 20 years they wouldn't have dreamed of saying.
True, but let's remember that these are hardliners. The DUP are hardliners. And hardliners have to sound hardline in public. I wouldn't be at all surprised if whilst they're flying the Union Jack up and down the six counties and screaming at the Irish, that behind the scenes, I would imagine it's a different situation. Because what the DUP are essentially arguing in public, the only conclusion I could come to, having been involved in this on an hourly basis, is that they're looking for a border around the six counties. And that just makes no economic sense whatsoever. So... we have to avoid triumphalism. I've been doing a lot of media in the UK. Simon Coveney and myself are talking regularly on this to make sure that this is a green jersey issue. This cannot be about politics, and we've been
and
working
yet the
very
Taoiseach
closely
won't meet the party leaders to discuss strategy. I saw that during the week. Brendan Howland, didn't he request that the Taoiseach sit down with everybody and share strategy?
Look, as I said at the start of the show, I'm not convinced about the Taoiseach's judgment generally. So
Peter, what have you to say about that? I was really surprised at that, to see that Brendan Howland asks for this meeting on Brexit and the Taoiseach does not take too much time.
Well, we have the European dialogue where the parties can negotiate and bring their ideas forward. Secondly, the Taoiseach said that he will, once he's in a position to do so, when he's at a more advanced stage.
So when he's made up his mind on everything, he'll bring the others in and tell them what he's doing.
That's worse. What he said was that he would bring them in when he had an ask of them. So he said, I'm not going to talk to you. Yeah. He said, I'll bring you in when I need you for something.
I think at the moment it's very clear that we as 27 members of the EU that we help build, that we help shape, are standing together. I think we went away from Sinn Féin's
argument. No, hang on. Is it not important that Ireland stands together? It is, as Stephen says, a green jersey issue. And
of course
if all
it is.
Of the other parties are offering to come along and come up with a solution or put their heads together.
And there's a forum to do that. We have the European dialogue whereby the parties can bring their ideas forward. The Taoiseach's door is always open to suggestions and ideas.
Is that right? Is
but
that true, Stephen?
Formally,
let's just be brief.
Hang on, the meeting was refused. I want to find out from Stephen.
Yeah, but he said he will meet him once he's at a more advanced stage.
Once he's made his mind up on everything.
That's not correct.
I will say.
And we have statements in the Dáil regularly in relation to this.
This is different. I will say, in fairness to Simon Coveney, I think Simon Coveney has been doing well as our Minister for Foreign Affairs, and he and I are talking regularly about this. And Fianna Fáil, we are working with our colleagues in ALDE. So, for example, the ALDE group has 6 heads of state. They all have a view. We've been talking to Guy Verhofstadt's office. So we are working
closely.
You
realise that everybody in the normal world thinks you're talking about a supermarket chain.
I'm sorry, So the Liberal Party in Europe has 6 heads of state. So when the 27 meet, six of them come from the ALDE group, from the Liberal group.
Okay.
Let's call it that. This is a green jersey issue. The tone that the Taoiseach used this morning that you just played out, I can tell you from 10 years living in the UK, if that were played on the BBC, it will get their backs up. That tone is wrong. Saying, Ara sure, they said they wouldn't pay more money and now they will. That's the wrong tone. Simon Coveney is getting the tone right, but our Taoiseach is getting the tone wrong. This is a green jersey issue. What Brendan Howland asked, Brendan Howland reached out and said, look, we all have to work together on this. Can the leaders of the parties just meet? And the Taoiseach said no. He said you can meet when I have something. Now, look, the last thing I'd say is the next 48 to 72 hours are critical. Prime Minister May is meeting, I think it's Donald Tusk, on Monday. And I know that our diplomats are working night and day at the moment to try and find wording that will work, because it is in
is
our interest.
Is that a deadline day? She
two.
Has to present something to him on Monday. That's the expectation, is
it's
it?
It's the expectation,
but it's sufficient progress.
It's not a hard deadline. The key is the following Friday. So this coming Friday, that's when Michel Barnier will issue his report, and he will make a recommendation as to whether or not sufficient progress has been made. If he says sufficient progress has not been made, that works very well for us, because the last thing that we need to be doing is to be seen by our friends and our neighbours in the UK to be exing any sort of virtual veto. This has to be a position of the
Martin,
EU
can
27.
You
I just want to come back in on the issue that Dervla brought up about the border issue. And really, you know, and I through the whole peace process, I remember there was an awful lot of work done on the high political high wire. But there was an awful lot of work done on the ground as well, in communities, talking to people, building understanding, building consensus, trying to put yourself in the other's shoes. I was involved in a lot of that work. And that's the kind of work that needs to be done now. Because really what we need to come to a stage is where people who would be from a strongly unionist background will understand that, and many of them are already starting to understand that Brexit isn't a good idea, it's not going to work well for us, but how do we get off this hook? And we need to find a way of getting those people off that hook and finding a way of moving it forward. And I think it has to be done at grassroots level first, and then slowly we'll see change happening in the higher political levels of the DUP. But again, you know, and I sat in the rooms with people who have a very narrow view of the world, and it's trying to broaden that view of the world is a difficult task, and it will take time. But unfortunately, the problem with Brexit is we don't have time. Okay. It's all happening very fast.
Last break. Take this quickly. Back with you after this. We only have a few minutes left, but I just want to go back to Leo Varadkar's interview on Marian Finucane's programme. He was asked for his response to personal attacks. Listen to what he had to say.
Yeah, there's one thing I understand about politics, and I've come to understand it, is that when people don't want to deal with you on substance and on facts, they attack you personally and attack your style. And the best way to deal with that is not to rise to it and to go back to the substance.
We were listening to that, Peter Burke, upstairs before we came down to do the programme, and we were thinking about Mary Lou MacDonald and how she has been attacked for reading her responses. She has been attacked for being negative all of the time by Leo Varadkar. Do those attacks by him constitute personal attacks?
Which attacks?
His attacks on Mary Lou in the Dáil.
No, that's Robert.
Accusing
the
her
pen,
of reading responses.
Pen, that's all of those.
Sorry. That's political, robust debate. From some of the comments that we heard from the UK in terms of the language and the names that the Taoiseach was called is totally different than robust debate in the Dáil. If you're not capable or able to robustly debate in the Dáil, you shouldn't be walking into that chamber. I think the Taoiseach is
a
very strong debater. He's very fair. No, in terms of, he looked at her record and what she says in the Dáil and compared it to their policies. And he was very robust in doing that. And in terms of calling out unfair practices and due process.
I mean, Marine Le Pen.
It's nonsense.
But there's nothing wrong with that. That's the robust debate.
I would welcome if he is going to go down that line. I would welcome if he says, yes, we will answer the questions. Yes, we will stick to the topic. Yes, we will stick to what should be discussed. When somebody asks a question, you give a straight answer. Anytime anyone from Sinn Féin asks a question of Leo, the first thing he does, he goes off on a wobbly talking about something that happened in the conflict. And then, for maybe the last sentence, he'll make some comment about the real question that was asked. And that is so frustrating and so annoying. And then people will say, oh, well, you can't attack. It's going on all the time and it's stupid.
I think this stuff is a question of degree as much as kind. I actually wrote about those attacks by Leo Varadkar on Mary Lou MacDonald in my column last week, and he can't have it both ways. Like, I mean, he essentially attacked her for coming to the Dáil prepared, and she is a very, very capable Dáil debater. I'd take issue with some of her own contributions in terms of attacks on others, but I think that what he said this morning was very valiant and it was very, very fair, but we need to see more of that applied by him in the Dáil himself.
Okay. In the last minute that we have, we are entering into a crucial week. Ray, what's the timeline? And Stephen, maybe I know you're both.
Tony Connolly has an amazing analysis on this on RT's blog about what is going to happen.
There you go.
Direct
it to there. But what's your prediction? What's going to happen?
My prediction is it'll go right to the wire, and it may even go beyond the wire slightly. But I'm optimistic that people will make the right compromise. I think there's too much at stake. But, you know, the clock can be put back if necessary. Let's hope it isn't. But, you know, if we're getting, if progress
what
is starting.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, if there's a deadline for next Friday.
Yeah.
And progress is being made and there's a site there, you begin to see the outline of a deal. Let's put it back till Monday. The deadlines are set to facilitate the negotiations, not to bring them down. So I presume that there's an awful lot of work going on this weekend, and this weekend will be the crunch point where
Ray, look how quickly the UK folded on the Brexit bill. I mean, Boris Johnson kind of, you know, woo, that went over pretty quickly. Okay. The big issue, I think, you know, for them is that the Brits are going to be under huge pressure this week to turn up on Monday with something.
Yes. Do you believe that, Stephen, that they'll turn up with something?
I hope they do. The hard deadline is the 14th and the 15th, which we can't get around. But Ireland's position, it's the government's position, it's Fianna Fáil's position, is if we need to move this to say no, we need to take a few more weeks, we need to take a few more months, the integrity of the border and avoiding a border trumps the short-term trade interests. And that's what must be put front and centre.
See what happens. Thank you all very much indeed for coming in today. I hope you can join me on television on Monday night at 10:30. I'm back here next week at 1:00. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Anne Farrell and Annette Egan. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. Research was by Alistair McConnell and A.B. Philbin-Bowman. And Tom Norton was on sound.